The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Malcolm X, speaking in 1964. He was born 98 years ago today, on May 19, 1925. Go to democracynow.org to see the full event with Dr. Angela Davis, Ben Crump, Malcolm X's daughter, Ilyasa Shabazz, and many others at the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center, the site of the Audubon Ballroom in New York City, where Malcolm X was gunned down February 21st, 1965. And that does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Samin Farkandeh, Eli Putnam, and Tamari Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thanks. Can't get enough of The Ghost of Hollywood? Check out our entire first season, now streaming wherever you choose to listen to your podcast. And don't forget to like and subscribe.
While you're at it, check out our website at theghostofhollywood.com so that we can keep you up to date on all the latest with The Ghost of Hollywood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power, on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at The Great Room in Beaverton. It's an annual gathering of AAPI community to celebrate the past year, talk about future hopes, and be together. That's Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power, on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at The Great Room, 15900 Southwest Regatta Lane, Suite 105 in Beaverton. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, 10 Oregon State Senate Republicans won't be able to run for re-election thanks to their walkout.
It's Women's Health Week, and doctors urge women to take stock of their mental health.
And smartly dressed motorcyclists take to the streets of Portland this weekend for the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 19th, 2023. I'm Harper Simone.
And I'm Josh Salem. Oregon State Senate Republicans still aren't back at work. Now, a total of 10 state lawmakers will not be allowed to be re-elected to the Oregon Senate. That's a consequence of Measure 113, which voters passed overwhelmingly in November. If any state lawmaker has more than 10 unexcused absences, they will be banned from seeking re-election. Republican lawmakers walked off the job to protest the priorities of the Democratic majority. They don't have enough support to change the legislation they object to, so they've been missing from the state capitol for nearly 2 weeks. Without at least one more senator present, the state Senate can't conduct any business because they don't have quorum. Two-thirds of senators have to be present in order for lawmakers to vote on bills. As of Thursday, state senators Tim Knopp, Lynn Findley, Bill Hansel, Kim Thatcher, Art Robinson, and Suzanne Weber have 10 absences and cannot run again. They join Daniel Bonham, Cedric Hayden, Dennis Lithencomb, and independent Brian Boquist, who hit their 10-day mark earlier this week. Three Republican senators have fewer than 10 absences.
The bills that state Republicans want to keep from passing are protections for abortion and gender-affirming health care and gun safety regulations. Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner says Democrats and Republicans spent 12 hours negotiating last weekend. Only in the last 15 minutes did they say that those were the bills they wanted to kill. Democrats aren't ready to water down their commitments to including protection for gender-affirming care and abortions through. Wagner also indicates he won't excuse any of the unexcused absences to try to get Republicans back to session. It's the first legislative session since Measure 113 was passed, so it's new territory for how the law will play out. Republicans have indicated they intend to challenge the law in court. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek says she's staying out of the back and forth for them at the moment, but she says she wouldn't consider calling a special legislative session if lawmakers can't pass a budget by June 25th, which is when the session is scheduled to end. Kotek also isn't completely rule out sending state troopers after the missing Republicans. Kotek said, quote, I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm treating people with respect. Get back to work. I don't need to chase you down.
If you see a bunch of dapper dressed motorcyclists on parade this weekend, don't be alarmed. It's probably the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. That's an annual global event happening in 94 different countries. Their goal is to raise money and awareness for men's health and wellness. KBOO's Althea Billings has more on the ride in Portland.
This weekend, hundreds of Portland-area motorcyclists are expected to gather for the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride to raise awareness and money for men's mental health, suicide prevention, and prostate cancer. The ride happens in countries around the world, and 2023 is Portland's 12th year participating. Austin Foster is one of the co-hosts of the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride in Portland. She says the ride has personal significance for her.
I started riding motorcycles on the back of my dad's motorcycle when I was little with him. And about 6 years ago, he got diagnosed with prostate cancer. And we used to ride in the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride together. I would ride on the back of his bike, and then he taught me how to ride motorcycles. And now I'm grateful to say he is in the Survivors Club. And so now as I help host the ride and lead the ride, I get to see my dad in my mirror right behind me, which is really wonderful. So that's how I got tied into the ride. It's definitely close to my heart, and it means a lot to me. And it's pretty great when we get out there and we see everybody dressed up in their suits and ties. We've got, you know, old classic vintage bikes.
The ride is planned for Sunday, May 21st, and will feature an hour and a half to two-hour route. Chris Sell is another co-host of the ride in Portland. He says part of what's important about the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride is dispelling myths about motorcyclists and common health issues that impact men.
People who ride motorcycles aren't just Hell's Angels, Evel Knievel type people. It's everybody, you know, fathers, sons, brothers, sisters, mothers, daughters, and everyone in between. It's everybody. Being able to get together and celebrate each other and see eye to eye with each other, no matter who they are, is a really nice sense of belonging. And I think, you know, studies have showed that like your overall health for your lifetime really depends on your relationships and the friendships that you make. And so I think those can be so much more beneficial. So getting together like a ride like this, I see people every year coming back. The ride itself has grown and grown, but being able to kind of see those same friendly faces and talk to them and see everything, it just really lifts the attitude on that day. I think the same thing for prostate cancer research, because I think with men's health tied to that, men stereotypically are maybe a little more quiet about that or want to kind of keep hush about it. But this is really something like, no, this should be something that we should all talk about. It's okay. And it's one of the only cancers that actually, if identified, can be treated and cured.
Funds raised by riders go towards the Movember Foundation of No Shave November fame. Sell and Foster say more details about the family-friendly event can be found online at gentlemansride.com. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
It's National Women's Health Week. It's the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic. Mental health is one of the most important issues this year. Eric Tegedoff has a story.
To wrap up Women's Health Week, doctors are urging women to take stock of their mental health. Dr. Sharon Ellaranta with the Washington Health Alliance says COVID-19 was hard for everyone and led to a drop in health screenings. She says with the worst of the pandemic over, some women may need to consider how to prioritize their health.
Women experienced more anxiety and stress during the time of the pandemic, and I think that may have been reflective of the fact that they worried not only about their own health, but about the health of the people in their families and others. And that can be a hill to climb if you're trying to get back into taking good care of yourself.
For Women's Health Week, which runs through Saturday, the CDC is asking women to schedule regular checkups, exercise, and eat a healthy and balanced diet. CDC data shows a disturbing trend in mental health, with the rate of young girls saying they attempted suicide twice that of young boys. Dr. Donna O'Shea, an OBGYN and Chief Medical Officer of Population Health at United Healthcare, says parents need to be on the lookout for symptoms of depression and anxiety in adolescent girls.
Especially after COVID, we found that 57% of high school girls have experienced persistent feelings of sadness in the last year. 10 years ago, that number was only 36%.
Ellaranta says it's important for people to pay attention when they aren't feeling normal.
I'm just down and nothing that usually makes me happy tends to change it. Then that's time to reach out and try and find some support. And again, it can be through your employer. It could be through your primary care. You can always call a friend and see if they have any referrals for you to go and get some assistance.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Retail giant Target is recalling nearly 5 million candles because they pose a risk of cuts and burns. That's according to a notice from the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission yesterday. The recall involves some 4.9 million Threshold branded glass jar candles. It includes multiple sizes and many scents, including water mint and eucalyptus, apple blossom and breeze, and warm cider and cinnamon. Target received 137 reports of the candle jars breaking or cracking during use. This led to at least 6 injuries, including cuts and severe burns. Consumers with the recalled Threshold candles should stop using them, and they can be returned to a Target store or through the mail for a full refund. Details about the size, scent, and item numbers of the candles are listed on the Safety Commission's website and on Target's recall page. The products were sold between August 2019 and March 2023 for prices between $3 and $20.
Leaders sound hopeful as debt ceiling talks continue. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene files to impeach President Biden, and the Supreme Court shields tech giants from liability over terrorist-related content. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Partisan legislation just won't produce the result we need. I am hopeful that soon both sides will find an agreement that keeps default completely off the table.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer expressed some optimism Thursday about reaching a bipartisan agreement on the national debt limit and avoiding default. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy also expressed hope congressional leaders could reach a deal in time to hold a House vote as early as next week. Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden Thursday over his handling of the nation's border security.
Joe Biden has deliberately compromised our national security by refusing to enforce immigration laws and secure our border.
House Republicans don't currently have the votes to impeach Biden. Earlier this year, several Republicans announced articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, but there has been no movement. Michael Barr, vice chair of the Federal Reserve, said his review of Silicon Valley Bank's failure found the bank's management practices and inadequate regulatory supervision by the Fed to be at fault for the collapse. Barr says he plans to improve the speed, force, and agility of supervision.
Supervision should intensify at the right pace as a bank grows in size or complexity. Once identified, issues should be addressed more quickly, both by the bank and by supervisors.
Earlier this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed several bills which target drag shows, restrict the use of personal pronouns in school, force the use of certain restrooms, and ban gender-affirming care for minors.
You have a movement amongst, I would say, rogue elements of the medical establishment to do things that is basically the mutilation of minors.
Meanwhile, the Walt Disney Company has canceled plans to build a billion-dollar office complex in Orlando and bring thousands of jobs to the state over changing business conditions, a week after Disney CEO Bob Iger spared with DeSantis about the company's investment in Florida. Last year, DeSantis signed a bill taking away the company's right to self-govern its 40-square-mile property after former Disney CEO Bob Chapek criticized a state law banning conversations of sexual orientation and gender identity in schools. The Supreme Court sided with tech giants Thursday, protecting online platforms from 2 liability lawsuits over terrorist-related content on their sites. In oral arguments, Justice Elena Kagan said supporters of more stringent tech standards could end up opening the door for a world of lawsuits.
Anytime you have content, you also have these presentational and prioritization choices that can be subject to suit.
Finally, a new analysis from the Democratic data firm Catalyst examined how Democrats avoided an electoral wipeout in the 2022 midterms. According to the data, the party focused on cultivating voters under 30, winning 65% of them, up from 62% in 2020. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's the Magical Mystery Tour. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear, with a low of 55 and wind gusts up to 13 miles an hour. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny. We'll see 79 degrees before ending the heat wave with temps in the low 70s for the rest of the weekend. Today in history, in 1963, the New York Post Sunday Magazine publishes Martin Luther King Jr.'s Letter from Birmingham Jail. That piece became an important text for the civil rights movement in the United States and is considered a classic document of civil disobedience. The quote of the day is from American Muslim minister and human rights activist Malcolm X, who was born today in 1925. He said, "I have no mercy or compassion in me for a society that will crush people and then penalize them for not being able to stand up under the weight."
Major tribal organizations pulled out of the Alaska Federation of Natives this week, and leaders respond. With that story and more is Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Alaska Federation of Natives is saying very little after the recent withdrawal of two tribal organizations from AFN. But as Rhonda McBride reports, early leaders of the AFN are talking.
The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida and the Tanana Chiefs Conference are among some of the largest tribal organizations in Alaska. Their sudden exit brings the number of recent departures from AFN to 5, including 3 prominent Native corporations. After AFN held its quarterly board meeting this week, it announced plans for its next convention, but only made brief mention of the departures. Instead, it said it asked a few of its founders to reflect on the sacrifices made to form AFN, apparently for the benefit of today's leaders.
They're living the dream that their grandparents sacrificed for.
Emil Nadi was one of those invited to speak at the meeting. Nadi was the first president of AFN, which successfully fought for one of the largest land claim settlements in U.S. history. Nadi says he told the board how early leaders donated time and effort to fight for land claims at great personal cost. Some even mortgaged their homes. He says today's leaders have good jobs and good educations, things they take for granted.
The AFN is a gift to them.
Some Native leaders have wondered if the tribes were unhappy with AFN's longtime president, Julie Kitka. Rosita Worrell, head of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, says she hopes that's not true because Kitka has been highly effective. She pointed to AFN's Alaska Day in Washington, D.C. this March, which brought 6 White House cabinet members and 4 generals together to meet with Alaska Native leaders.
We have someone at the leadership helm who can pick up a phone and call the White House.
The 2 tribal organizations have said they believe they can be more effective working on their own. I'm Rhonda McBride.
This week, the First Lady made a quick stop in Bethel, Alaska, where she highlighted the administration's broadband investments. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports.
Joe Biden, along with Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, were warmly greeted on the tarmac by Representative Mary Peltola, the First Lady of the state of Alaska, and City Mayor Rose Sugar Henderson during a quick visit to Bethel, where internet access is very limited. The First Lady highlighted a broadband fiber optic extension being constructed this year.
And this is one of the largest tribal broadband expansions in our country. With high-speed internet, you'll have better access to critical health care, new educational tools, and remote job opportunities.
The Biden administration has awarded $386 million in tribal broadband connectivity program grants to 21 projects throughout Alaska, with funding from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and Consolidated Appropriations Acts of 2021. In 2022, the Biden administration awarded roughly $125 million in funding to 2 broadband infrastructure deployment projects in the YK Delta. One of these projects is the Alaska Fiber Optic Project. The other funding is going directly to the IHUC Network, an initiative developed in partnership from the Bethel Native Corporation and GCI, Alaska's largest telecommunications company. I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture Thursday announced $16 million in funding for projects to help increase participation in WIC, which provides supplemental foods, healthcare referrals, and nutrition education to women, infants, and children. Some tribal programs are among the 36 projects to receive funding. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The new College of Florida is known as a progressive school, but now Governor Ron DeSantis has recently appointed right-leaning trustees and a new president. Students are voicing concerns, calling it a hostile takeover. They've held daily protests and plan for an alternative commencement speaker instead of an advisor to former President Trump. Tramell Gomes has the latest.
Following what's described as a hostile takeover by right-wing conservatives at the progressive New College of Florida, students and prospective graduates are protesting daily. The latest comes as students held an alternate commencement on Thursday evening, rather than listen to the administration's choice of former Trump advisor Dr. Scott Atlas, scheduled to speak at Friday's commencement. Alumni and student organizers welcomed Maya Wiley with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights to be Thursday's keynote speaker. Second-year student Nisreen Kalai describes feeling trapped with the school's new leadership and Governor DeSantis's restrictive laws on education.
It makes it feel like inescapable, like even if I did go to another university in Florida, it's just going to be the same thing of, you know, diversity doesn't matter to us. That's the statement that they're making, is that we want this place to be, Florida, to be like a conservative playground.
DeSantis and his allies contend the college, with a prominent LGBTQ+ community, is indoctrinating students with leftist ideology and should be remade into a more conservative institution. This week, DeSantis used the campus as his backdrop to sign into law a measure aimed at prohibiting colleges and universities from spending money on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Kalai says the last 4 months have been tough for students, seeing faculty resign and students choosing to self-govern. She says they're taking on their own diversity clubs, since faculty is now barred from being advisors to many campus organizations.
The environment of being here has not felt the same. I mean, I personally don't like the fact that I have to wake up in the beginning of my exam week and protest bills that are directly affecting my education.
The governor also signed a separate bill to prevent colleges and universities from requiring political loyalty tests for students and employees as a condition of admission or employment. New College in Sarasota became a sticking point for DeSantis's aim at transforming higher education. He replaced trustees with conservative members who later fired the school's president. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection.
Most teachers support teaching students about climate change, but many feel unprepared to teach the topic and worry about pushback from parents. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Kids today will face a future with more severe droughts, stronger storms, and rising sea levels. Yet many schools are not preparing students for the climate of tomorrow.
Of course, there are exceptions, but overall, we're just not doing enough.
Judy Brouse is the executive director of the North American Association for Environmental Education. Her group recently surveyed hundreds of teachers and school administrators across the country. The survey showed that most teachers want to cover climate topics, but many feel unprepared to do so, and they worry about resistance from some parents.
They don't feel confident or informed, and that makes it really hard for them to be able to integrate climate change into what they're doing.
So she says it's important for administrators to make climate change part of the formal curriculum and to provide teachers with training and resources. She says museums, science centers, universities, and other community institutions can often help. And she says parents can play a critical role by advocating for climate education.
Teachers are truly the backbone of our society, and they need more support from administrators, from parents, and the community, as well as through policies that support this important work.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Two marine conservation areas in Oregon will be managed, in part, by local residents. The state designated the areas at Cape Foulweather and Cape Lookout in April. Eric Tegetoff reports.
Locals will help steward two iconic locations on Oregon's coast. The Cape Foulweather Complex and Cape Lookout Marine Conservation Areas were approved for designation in April by the Oregon Land Conservation and Development Commission. The Audubon Society of Lincoln City plans to recruit local residents for stewardship in 2025. Kent Doty with the organization says it's a unique approach to conservation.
It's bottom-up management for sites that local communities really care and love. For the community to really get a say in how a site is managed and cared for.
The areas have broad support from local communities. Every resident of the neighborhood near Cape Foulweather signed a letter in support of the conservation area designation. Both areas are known for being home to thousands of nesting seabirds. Doty says other larger creatures can also be seen at Cape Foulweather, for instance.
Amazing views. Almost any day of the year you can see whales feeding in the kelp beds. So it's a pretty incredible place.
Kelp forest restoration will be important at Cape Lookout, he says. His organization is planning on finding ways to incorporate outdoor education programs through nearby Camp Merriweather at the site as well. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Old technology is being used in a new way to save riverbed habitat in Montana. Its supporters say biotechnical stabilization not only slows erosion, but it also creates a healthy environment for vegetation along streams and riverbeds. Mark Moran has more.
Environmental advocates in Montana are using an older form of technology in new ways to improve the quality of the land near riverbeds and also slow erosion. It's called biotechnical stabilization, and it involves using environment-friendly materials adjacent to riverbeds to slow floodwaters, for example. At the same time, it creates an ecologically supportive environment for vegetation to grow. Mike Sprague, CEO of Livingston, Montana-based Trout Headwaters, says using this method allows the soil to remain stable and vegetation to take root.
Biotechnical stabilization is a way of kind of fixing the soil with materials, fabrics, and other types of materials to support that soil in such a way that then all of that can be revegetated. All that area that might have been erosional can be revegetated.
The technology dates to the 1930s, but Sprague says Trout Headwaters is trying to help it make a comeback, not only in Montana, but in other areas with sensitive waterways, including the Mississippi Delta, in cooperation with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Sprague says for decades, landowners have resorted to low-tech methods like dumping boulders and huge amounts of rock in rivers and streams to slow them down in an attempt to hold their soil in place during a flood. But always with bad results.
This idea that we can simply take steel or large rock and dump it in these rivers and maintain our shoreline, our bank line, our property. These efforts, these attempts are failing day after day after day after day. There are better alternatives.
Sprague contends biotechnical stabilization will see new life with the success his group is having in Montana and other sensitive habitat areas. And we'll have more proof as the number of extreme weather events causes record flooding. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Mark Moran.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 19th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, Mark Moran, Tremel Gomes, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Harper Simone. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can do so at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, do you care about environmental degradation? Then you care about Cup City. Do you care about the violent over-policing of black and brown communities? Then you care about Cup City. Do you care about purportedly democratic governance that overrides the actual voice of the people? Well, then you care about Cup City. But be aware, your concern about Cup City and its myriad impacts and implications may get you labeled a domestic terrorist. The official response to popular resistance to the militarized policing facility being created on top of the forest in Atlanta, Georgia, is an exemplar of how some officials intend to bring all powers to which they have access, and even to create new powers, to treat anyone that stands in opposition to whatever they decide to do as enemies of the state, deserving life-destroying prison sentences. So if your thoughts about Cop City don't motivate you, think about your right to protest anything at all. We'll talk about anti